But first, James Burrows. He's a man of many nicknames. The sitcom sorcerer, the Steven Spielberg of sitcoms, and the Concord of TV pilots, which would make him the James Burrows of supersonic airliners. James has been making America laugh for half a century with his masterful direction of some situation comedies that I'm sure you're familiar with, like The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Taxi, Cheers, Frasier, Friends, and Will and Grace. His memoir is called Directed by James Burrows. In his book and in our conversation, James shares the secrets of his success. He also expresses his appreciation for the man who helped launch his incredible career.
I didn't know how big an influence he was on me because he was just my dad. He would trundle my sister and I off to rehearsals and we would kind of run around the back of the theater, didn't know what was going on. And I like to say he taught me when I didn't know I was learning. I ended up at the Yale School of Drama, and once I went there as a student there, you have to take courses in directing, acting, writing, stage managing, scene design. I began, as I took these courses, to realize how much I had learned just kind of watching my dad. And so after I graduated, I started as a stage manager in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about how he worked and interacted with people?
Well, he was a kind man, but he also knew what he wanted. He got it through kindness. He would not say, no, you have to do it this way. He would, if an actor had a suggestion, he'd experiment with that suggestion, or they'd come up with another suggestion. He always made it feel like it was a group decision of what was funniest at that moment in the play, so that the actor felt involved in it. That's how I've worked, because actors are so valuable to what I do. So what I do is I try to create, empower the actor to contribute. If the writer's work doesn't work at this certain moment, maybe we can find something that'll make it work. That was all from my dad. He was, my dad was a playwright director, so as he was directing, he would rewrite.
Right. And so, actors, that's why actors so much and love you so much and enjoy working with you, because you treat them as an equal and you treat them with kindness.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful, happy experience on the set.
Yeah. You worked on the sitcom Taxi, and you say that it was the toughest job you ever had. Why?
It was my first resident directorship. I was hired to do all the shows. It was this incredible group of writers that had come over from MTM, James Brooks, Ed Weinberger, Stan Daniels, and Dave Davis. And I had a cast that was interplanetary.
Banta, what the hell's going on here? You're supposed to be out on the road.
I ain't going, Louis. I got a problem.
Oh, not again. The one on the left's the brake. The one on the right's the gas.
This was daunting for a man who, in 1978, had really no self-esteem in the directing world. I went into this with a lot of trepidation. It was the first time four film cameras was used all the time on a situation comedy, which was another extenuating circumstance. And to try to put all these things together, to try to mold the cast into the homogeneous group that I like on a show was really, really difficult. And I really worked hard on that show. In fact, Danny DeVito, at the end of the first year, gave me a neon sign that he had made. And it was a replica of an eye. And in the center of the eye was the word beads, B-E-A-D-S. Because he said, at the end of every week, I had beads in my eyes. It was so difficult. And they still, Tony and Danny still call me beads.
You, along with Glenn and Les Charles, who you refer to affectionately as the brothers, you guys got a development deal with Paramount Pictures to create Cheers. Why did you want to do that?
Well, the Charles brothers were the producers of Taxi. So the three of us were on Taxi. That's not where we met. We had met on the Phyllis show, where they were story editors. And so when we re-met on Taxi, We had the same agent, an agent so powerful he's only known as Broder. And he said, you guys should do your own show. So he went out and shopped, and there was a guy named Michael Zinberg who worked at NBC, who was at MTM when the three of us were there. We made a deal, and it was time for us. We had paid our dues. We knew what to do. That's a lot of the problem now with so many of these shows. The people who get commitments to do shows have not paid their dues, have not gone through the gauntlet of what it takes to make a situation comedy. And so we had done that. And so we got this deal to do two for one, which meant we made two pilots. They had to put one on the air.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you when Shelley Long decided to leave and then you guys brought in Kirstie Alley? Was that a difficult transition to make?
Oh, yeah. Why are you going to break up Edith and Archie?
Yeah, you know? Right.
Well, this is the dynamo that's driving the show. What are we going to do? We were devastated. We understood. We understood what she wanted to do, and she was phenomenal. Without mm-hmm. Shelley Long, Cheers doesn't get to year two. Without the Charles brothers writing that character and Shelley's ability to play that character, where half the men in the world wanted to sleep with her and the other half wanted to kill her, and some wanted to do both, we don't get to year two.
Yes, I would like to speak to the person in charge of female dehumanization. What do you mean, speaking?
So we were devastated. But, you know, we went back when we originally conceived the show. It was Sam working for a woman. When we redid it, we decided to go back to that old chestnut that was in the trunk. And the boys wrote the part for Rebecca Howe. And our casting director, Jeff Greenberg, came in and said, Kirstie Alley. And that was it.
All right. I'll give you another chance.
All right. Thank you.
But I want to make something very clear.
Okay.
You've just got one chance left. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, again, in baseball ease, it's the bottom of the ninth. You've got two outs, two strikes, and no balls.
One of the proudest moments of your career was when Joe Biden was asked about same-sex marriage on a Meet the Press interview back in 2012. What did he say?
He said that Will and Grace had done more for the progression to gay marriage than anything else. So we were over the moon about that.
Okay, that's just a straight guy's way of thinking that you and I could ever be a couple.
Okay, first of all, Will should only be so lucky. Okay, so let's just clear that right up. Second of all, you don't even know me that well. Why would you just assume that I was gay? Okay, FYI, folks, most people that meet me do not know that I am gay.
Jack, blind and deaf people know you're gay.
Tell me about, like, when you were first pitched the idea of Will and Grace and why you decided to do it and also to do the recent revival, the reboot.
Well, when I read that script, Max Munchak and Dave Cohen wrote that script. It was an extraordinary script in the fact that it was a situation comedy that happened to have two gay characters. It was not a situation comedy about gay characters. It was just happened to have these two characters. And it also had two women who were heightened characters too. So the show is played on a level a little above your ordinary living room sitcom because there's such energy amongst the four of them. So when I read the script, I had to do it. The boys had written this wonderful script. And when we first ran it in front of an audience 4 days before we shot it, the audience went crazy. They loved it. So I knew we had something special. But I also knew we had a problem in that 25% of the country wouldn't watch the show. Hmm. But once people came to the dance, again, it takes a long time in television for people to come to the dance. They loved that show. And they didn't care because it was so funny. They didn't care who those characters were. It was the funniest show I ever did.
Yeah, do you have a favorite? This is a tough question to ask you, but as you probably learned by now, James, I'm all about asking the tough questions. Do you have a favorite scene or a favorite episode of Will and Grace that really stands out?
There's so many. Mm-hmm. I did 246 of them, including the reboot. But there's one in the reboot, which is more heartfelt. I think Grace finds a box of letters that Will has written to her. And there's one letter that's never been opened.
How did I not read this letter? I mean, you went through so much after you came out, and I wasn't there for you.
We don't have to talk about it.
No, we do. I have to. Because that's the way the story of the gay guy and the straight girl is always told, isn't it? He broke her heart. Poor her. It is why I never say I'm sorry. And I have been playing the victim. So, I am gonna say it now. Doesn't it feel good?
Still haven't said it.
And it was Max's idea. It makes the point that when the boy comes out and is gay, it's always about the girl and how it's unfortunate for her. But Max's point was it's also unfortunate for the guy. So I thought that was extraordinary. Something I never would have dreamed of. But Max being a gay man, it had happened to him. So, there's so many outrageously funny shows, including the live Will and Grace when it all takes place in Karen's bathroom. It's a really funny show.
Yeah, definitely. You've spent 50 years making people laugh. What is the scene that you've directed that gets the biggest laughs from you?
I have two or three.
Okay.
The first two are tied.
Ooh.
Number one is, what does a yellow light mean from Taxi?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I'll never forget, I went to New York on a trip and I took a couple of Taxi scripts with me and I read that one on the plane. And the stewardess came over to me. I was laughing so hard and said, "Sir, are you all right?"
What does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Slow down. Okay. What?
The other one tied is when Ross is about to ask Rachel out on a date, and they're on the ledge, they're on the balcony of the apartment.
Well, for a while now, I've been wanting to...
He's about to ask her out. He's screwing up the courage to do it. And a cat jumps on Schwimmer's shoulder. And inside are Phoebe, our Matt, Lisa, and Courtney singing Top of the World with their back to the window. And back and forth across the window is Schwimmer trying to get the cat off his shoulder. We had a live cat when I shot the scene with Jen and David, but when we were inside, we had a fake cat. So that's why Schwimmer is so abusive to that animal.
Yeah, that's a great scene. What is next for James Burrows? Is there any? You seem to have done it all. Is there anything you haven't done that you're still itching to do?
It's probably not something I'm itching to do. I'd like to find a show again that makes me laugh, like Will and Grace did, and. You know, I couldn't do all of them, but I would, you know, maybe two and then another two and stuff like that just to keep the ligaments oiled. In December, I worked with Norman Lear on the live show in front of the studio audience.
Yeah, those were great.
I had a great time doing.
Yeah.
I it scared the crap out of me because I have to be in a booth cutting the show live, which... On all the shows I ever did, I never cut them live. They were shot on film and delivered to an editor, and then they were edited down. You know, I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm. yeah, we'd like to see you do more stuff. Not like you haven't done enough already. James Burroughs, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Directed by James Burroughs, and thank you for all the laughs, thousands of laughs that you've given us.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
James Burroughs is the author of the memoir, Directed by James Burroughs. You can find out more about James and his work at wpr.org/beta.
It's a very interesting work for the reader, having to put together all these different perspectives and kind of come up with the real sense of what's going on.
Coming up, Tom Perotta tells us what life is like now for his hardworking, overly ambitious character, Tracy Flick, who appears in his novel Election and the movie of the same name. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.